The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
I didn't know it, but I was destined to be your mama. I did the best I could.
You did good, Mama.
Well, I happen to believe you make your own destiny. You have to do the best with what God gave you.
What's my destiny, Mom?
You're gonna have to figure that out for yourself. Life is a box of chocolates, Forrest. You never know what you're gonna get.
Welcome, everyone. It is Wednesday, December 31st, 2025. I'm Bob Metz, and this is Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right-wing. It's Just Right.
Fade into color, and color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
So, here we are. We made it to this point. On the precipice of a new year, with expectations of a peaceful and prosperous future, looking somewhat more pessimistic than optimistic, I'm afraid. But in the spirit of making New Year's resolutions, given this particular moment in time, we could possibly try to establish a case for tabula rasa, as in starting with a blank slate for the new year. But for some reason, instead of being able to start afresh, it appears to me that the zeitgeist in 2026 won't be that different from 2025. Expect 2026 to be a very interesting box of metaphorical chocolates on the cusp of a future that will very soon become our present and then our past, which is something I might have said at this time last year about the year 2025. Unexpected and unpredictable events aside. For those on the right, we can expect to see and hear a continuation of all the infighting that we've been forced to discuss recently, and will again later today in the show. And for the broader state of democracy in the West, the only hope of a recovery has to come from the right, and from the values associated with the right, which itself appears threatened by fracturing. Just a few of the themes we'll be reflecting on, along with a few announcements and updates, all starting right after our reminder that you can write us at feedback@justrightmedia.org. Hear us on WBCQ and on Channel 292 Shortwave. Follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform, and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because, as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible. And with that thought in mind, and at this particular time of year, let me take this opportunity to thank a few of our recent financial supporters, including contributors Trevor D., Troy K., Stephen L., Rob S., Murray T., Philip V., Ashley R., Conrad L., and of course, Paul Lambert, who sponsors our show on shortwave radio and has been a guest on the show as well. There's no advertising on Just Right, and since we are only funded through volunteer donations and sponsorships, rest assured that Big Pharma is not writing our script. 2025 has been an interesting year for us here at Just Right, the us being primarily myself and co-host Robert Vaughn, who produced the show entirely on a voluntary basis. Neither of us takes any personal remuneration for our part, and that's why every dollar donated to the show goes towards maintaining and growing our website and other relevant platforms, the purpose of which is to maintain an archive of valuable philosophy, history, and other unique presentations about the nature and behavior of human beings. Between us, Robert is a tech guy, because if it were up to me alone, I don't know if I would ever have even had an email account set up, let alone a website. And I know most of you are probably thinking that's a joke, so I'll just leave it there for now. We are aware that many of you listen to the show on various platforms that do not require you to actually visit our website directly. And so I just wanted to take a moment to let you know about a few recent changes and features on the site that you might not be aware of and which could prove useful. Robert has been doing a lot of maintenance and upgrade work to our justwritemedia.org website, but most of those changes are not visible to the naked eye, you might say, except for one very noticeable one. What were formerly static thumbnail links to other Just Write pages on the homepage are now animated, the most notable one being the link to our Every Episode page featuring the flames of hot conversation burning throughout history. And this is also one of the pages that Robert completely updated in a very visible sense, with audio players now accompanying each broadcast, when before each MP3 had to be downloaded or played on each visitor's own home computer player. But of course, downloading shows is always an option still. And here's a very important distinction about that Every Episode link and page. It is the only link through which to access every episode of Just Write from show number 1 to the present, since we still haven't really completed blog posts for each episode, especially the earlier ones. Remember, Just Write began as an FM radio broadcast show back in early 2007, a few years before we even established a functional website, and long before anyone even expected the show to last a season or more. But we did save our early shows as MP3s, which is how they all managed to get archived on the site. Now, of course, we did eventually manage to get ourselves kicked off the radio station, thanks to our advocacy in September 2015 of having immigrants to Canada vetted in some way before being allowed in. Next thing we knew, our online audience exploded and one of our fans and listeners, Paul Lambert, of course, stepped forward to have us broadcast on shortwave, and now it's 2026 and we have no shortage of relevant topics and issues to tackle. So, long story short, Just Write is a show that evolved out of a history that could never have predicted our current state today. And for those who are relatively new to our weekly broadcasts, to the best of my knowledge, there are no other programs like Just Write that is devoted to the science of epistemology, the knowledge of validating knowledge. Just Write has a unique delivery signature, employing, as a matter of consistent practice, entertainment and comedy selections to accompany our news and commentary sources. That way, we can assure a measure of aesthetics in the mix and narrative of the day. As they say, art imitates life. Or is it the other way around? The other unique perspective of the show is to be found in the name, Just Write. A name and point of view which we have adopted both in its generic sense and in its recognition that there is no political spectrum, but only a polarity of left and right. Every broadcast of Just Write begins with a reminder that the views expressed in this program are those of the participants, and it bears noting that this applies not only to ourselves or our guests, but also to the views expressed in the various audio bites we select, and yes, even in the drama clips. And a sort of side mission of Just Write is reflected in the nature of the audio bites we choose. The audio clips we feature each week are those that we think offer the best analysis or reflection of the topic discussed and are a way for us to introduce our listeners to other podcasters and newsmakers that they might not otherwise be aware of. And while I'm thinking about it, longtime listeners may have noticed that I don't always introduce a particular audio bite going into a bumper break. So if you're ever curious about the source of a TV show, movie, comedy, skit, etc., remember that accompanying each blog post are two buttons, a topics button and a clips and credits button. The clips and credits button will give you the info you need. Ultimately, we are on the side of any such players who are sincerely and honestly in search of the truth, even if it escapes us from time to time. Despite all the infighting on the right, for the most part, and I think for most of them, truth is their intended objective, knowledge of what is true in terms of coinciding with reality and reason. And that's why we devote so much time to countering all of the untruths out there, particularly in the field of philosophy and politics, where we have made every mistake in the book on our own path to discovering so many broad misunderstandings about the nature and purpose of government. and we're hoping that perhaps we can prevent others from making the same mistakes that we made. And one of those discovered truths is one you've heard me mention before, and I quote, "Ain't so much what people don't know that gets them into trouble, it's what they do know that just ain't so," end quote. And in this respect, I'm pleased to still be able to say that we continue to be batting 1,000 on our broader reporting and interpretation of current events and the ideas that swirl about us, never having had to retract any of our previous reports. And if you haven't done so already, when visiting our site, consider joining our email subscription list, and you'll get an email update and reminder whenever a new show or video is released. And you can rest assured that we do not share or sell our mailing list to anyone. So, once again, thank you to all of our listeners who enjoy and share the show, and to our financial supporters who make it all happen. So if you haven't done so already, consider financially supporting the show by clicking on the support button at the top of our homepage. Your donations not only make it possible to make Just Right available for yourself, but for thousands of others who have become regular free listening fans. No paywalls here. Our only barrier and obstacle continues to be the left and leftist thinking, which has led to an increasing cynicism and disdain for politics and government in general. And here is perhaps one of the more cynical assessments of today's political zeitgeist, reflecting an attitude and frustration with government in general that I'm sure is shared by millions like him. From his November 26 online presentation delivered before a live audience, Jim Brewer has concluded that no matter who you are, government doesn't care about you one way or the other.
No government cares for the people. No government, period, cares for people. And that's where we need to shake all of you up and wake you up. I don't care if you're in Norway. I don't care if you're in Switzerland. I don't care where you are, what your government is. I don't care if you're Republican, you're Democrat, you're a lefty, you're a righty. None of it matters. They don't care about you.
I'm doing shows a couple years ago, and I said, listen, I'm not going to do shows that require a vax card or for you to be vaccinated. Herbie was one of those, and he said, that's it, that's a career ender. This is really bad, really bad. Because every news network came out to hear about this Jim Brewer. He's a grandmother murderer. He don't care about humanity. And I do believe we are at a place in time where you're either going to recognize the madness, you're going to recognize your government don't care about you. Your Republicans don't care about you. Your Democrats don't care about you. They are two of the same wing. It's time to wake. You got to wake up. I'm telling you, they don't care. So what is some of the solution? You have to start watching news, and you have to start watching all the politicians without emotion. And think of what you saw this week. You saw Trump and the mayor of New York.
In this corner, we have the communist Muslim.
The Muslims are taking over! The Muslims are taking over! The Muslims are taking over!
Right? It's a script. It's a script. This is, they're actors. It's all being put in our face to what? To divide you, which another phenomenal thing. And then in the other corner, you have
a sexual harasser. He's been convicted and he had to step down from office after murdering elderly during COVID. One of the best elderly killers, it's Mario Cuomo.
Like, why are you kidding me? Who's falling for this? People are. You're still falling for it. I see people reaching out in New York going, I can't believe that, that Trump. And he had Trump like, what were the things that Trump, this guy, he's a devil. He's going to bring this. And next thing you know, they're hanging out. You know, he said some things. I said some things. It's all good. It's all good. It's all good. It's all good. I'm getting the feeling most humanity, I'm getting tired of being played. I'm getting tired of watching everyone bicker over the same nonsense. Most people are questioning a lot of things right now. We want to know, why is our tax money funding this? Why is our tax money? Bro, I go so far in the rabbit hole that I'm finding out tax is volunteer. It's you volunteer to do it. So do we have to pay taxes? Can we find that out? Can you imagine we all had the balls enough to go, we're not paying taxes this year. But you know what? There's too many fairies in here. Too many fairies. They can't. Who are they coming after? If we all did, how amazing would that be? Think about the things that your favorite president. Listen, I was all for this guy. But you know what? They found all this money. Remember? Oh, we found $20 billion here, $30 billion. Did you get a check? Did you get a check? Did anyone get a check? I go to gas. Gas is still over $3 in Naples, Florida. I went and bought milk the other day. I was like, $9 for milk. For milk. Are you kidding me? So I don't want to hear the prices are down while we're funding another country to launch bombs. And when we have our leader going, you know, I gave him a lot of bombs, a lot of bombs, and he knew how to use them. He knew how to use them, and now we have peace. Oh, that's how we solve peace. It's madness. It's all madness. So with that said, I had the big talk about bringing some noise. I don't want to bring the noise. See, I get amped up. I don't like it. I don't like the noise. And that's why I like peace. And I feel like we need a time where peace, we need answers. We don't need to be constantly aggravated. You know, I get, my friends will text me and they go, can you believe this? Can you believe that? This has been from the beginning of time. They know you're not going to do nothing. They know you can't wait for your football game this Sunday. They know you still pay $10 for a venti latte mochalata with sprinkles on it at Starbucks. They know you're going to pay taxes. They know you're just going to complain. You've banked. They know you're just going to go, I can't believe they're spraying the skies again. They just know. They're laughing in our faces, but it is, it's time, people. This ain't, it was only, what are we, 2025? It was only 5 years ago they locked down the whole world. The whole world. It was only 5 years ago where they divided every family. It was only 5 years ago. Only 4 years ago, they were still trying to do that. They were still, only 3 years ago, they were rioting all of it. In my opinion, this has been one of the biggest moves of a grand empire takeover, not only of the U.S., of the entire world, of the entire world. And I can't help to think about hearing Bob Marley's words over and over, all governments are illegal. All governments are illegal. Where I grew up in Long Island, we had neighborhoods. And in the neighborhood, we all knew each other. We may not like each other, but we knew each other. And if someone stepped out of line, we, as the community, dealt with it. We didn't have to call the cops. We didn't have to go get a judge. We didn't have to worry about a law or who was going to let them go. We didn't have to worry about any of that. I went to Africa, and I went to a village there, and at the village, I asked them, you guys are going to see this. I filmed it. You're going to see it. That's coming down the pike. That's coming up. The elders, I said, what do you do when things, like if someone gets out of line? They said, the elders, the older ones, the wise ones, They get together and they decide how bad of a situation this is. They then go to the home and they discuss it with the family and the person that did this deed. I remember being a part of Africa where we were driving in a van, and we were with a woman in a car, and everywhere we went, there were kids everywhere. And in one of the tables, she basically had a little craft she made and some clothes. And the lady in the van, we were going to a museum, and the lady in the van goes, "I can't believe these kids are just, there's like kids everywhere, just no one watching them, and there's things on the table. They would steal that. Are you kidding? If that was left out in New Jersey and New York, I mean, they would just take it." And the driver stopped and he said, "Let me tell you," I don't know how to do an African accent, but he goes, "Let me tell you something, this neighborhood, if someone were to come and steal something, everybody in this neighborhood would chase that human being down, grab what they did, and make sure they never do that again. They would never disrespect another human being like that. I don't know what type of society you live in." And that's where we have to start thinking deeper. We've been conditioned to think we're so much better, so much smarter, so much freer. That's the big word we like. We're free, right? Aren't we free? Oh my God, we're free. Unless you text the wrong thing. We're free. Unless you talk about certain countries. We're free. Unless you do certain things. We're free. Unless you're not into vaccines. We're free. We're not free. I don't even believe we vote. I really don't. I learned this a long time ago. I remember asking my dad, "Why does the news say, the polls say, the latest polls say so-and-so is winning?" What is the point of putting a poll in your face? I'll tell you what I think it is. It's to condition your mind. It's really that simple. Jerry's beaten Billy. So you might as well not even come out, because Billy, I mean, it's clear that he's going to win. Jerry's just crushing it. Jerry's just murdering him. They're already telling you how it's going to go down. Has anyone out there in the audience ever, ever, ever been polled? Who's getting polled? I don't know anyone that's ever been polled in my lifetime, ever. I don't like getting caught up in the madness.
The question of whether or not what we call democracy is a fiction was the democratic dilemma discussed on our December 3rd broadcast, when we questioned the very concept of democracy. Is it consent of the governed or government by consensus? What most fail to realize is that these two views are incompatible. That's because the principle of consent rests on individual rights, which is something on the right polarity, while the principle of consensus allows for the violation of individual rights, which is why it sits on the left polarity. These two very different concepts of democracy, quote-unquote, have long been in conflict, resulting in a social condition that no longer seems democratic. Consequently, many no longer feel that their governments represent them, and they're actually questioning whether or not what most see as democracy is just a fiction. Well, before elaborating on this dilemma, on a personal note, I have to say that I was pleasantly surprised by Jim Brewer's reference to reggae star Bob Marley, someone I recall having similarly referenced when I delivered a speech to about 1,100 high school and college kids at a United Nations-sponsored event held at the University of Western Ontario in London, probably about 4 or 5 decades ago. I was one of a panel of 4, teamed up with London Free Press columnist and reporter Rory Leishman on the right and 2 members of the NDP party on the left. I recall that the event's organizer, the late Bill Paul, told me later that at the end of the week-long event, during which dozens of speakers were heard, their event survey revealed that I was one of only about 5 or 6 that they could remember at the end of the week. And that was probably because, in citing my argument for free trade and rational government to the audience, I quoted some passages from Bob Marley's song, Crazy Baldhead, before I revealed to them who the reggae artist was, but I hinted it was one. Remember, Bob Marley was not a mainstream name at the time. And I remember discovering Marley after hearing Eric Clapton perform his song, I Shot the Sheriff, which always had me questioning, so why didn't he shoot the deputy? But during my reading of the key words from Crazy Baldhead, I could hear a lot of the kids in the audience whisper to each other, it's Bob Marley. He's talking about Bob Marley. And I thought that was kind of an interesting reaction. And these are the words that they heard me recite, and I quote, I and I build the cabin. I and I plant the corn. Didn't my people before me slave for this country? Now you look me with this scorn. Then you eat up all my corn. You build your penitentiary, we build your schools. Brainwash education to make us the fools. Hate is your reward for our love, telling us of your God above. Here comes the con man, coming with his con plan. We won't take no bribe, we've got to stay alive. We're gonna chase those crazy bald heads out of town, end quote. And it sounds like a plan for 2026. Not only that, Marley's assessment of those crazy bald heads, being his term for the government in power, sounds like what we've been hearing from everybody like Alex Jones to Jim Brewer himself. Bear in mind that Marley rose to fame during a time when Michael Manley and Edward Siega were vying for political control of Jamaica in elections that were usually accompanied by a gratuitous amount of gunfire and violence. Bob Marley was the only person in Jamaica who ever managed to get the two-party leaders on a single stage together without shooting at each other, which is kind of where politics in America has descended today. But with regard to the comment that all governments are illegal, while I appreciate the sentiment, the obvious question that arises is, illegal? I mean, the things that are legal or illegal are determined by governments. So under what government's jurisdiction is government itself considered illegal? This contradiction is reminiscent of an old bumper sticker quote that I recall, legalize freedom, as if quote-unquote legalizing freedom would ever create a condition of freedom. And of course, when people say something like governments are illegal, usually their source of authority in this regard would be some version of morality, whether inspired religiously or by rational discernment. As summarized in Wikipedia, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's and unto God the things that are God's. This phrase has become a widely quoted summary of the relationship between Christianity, secular government, and society. And kudos to Jim Brewer when he said that Republicans and Democrats don't care about you, they are two of the same wing. Notice that he didn't call them a uniparty, but identified them as being two parties of the same wing, which was a far more accurate assessment than the usual dismissal of a left-right polarity altogether. But what he didn't say was that in this case, the same wing is the left one. And while I can, again, appreciate the context of criticizing the people in government for not caring about you, when it comes to government itself, we have to understand that governments do not exist to care about us, nor do they exist to legalize any human behavior. A government that governs with the consent of the governed is a government that limits itself to not making quote-unquote legal, but to making illegal only those few actions that obviate consent. Thou shalt not kill and thou shalt not steal sound like two good places to start. Which brings us back to our current democratic dilemma. The lack of a unified right, the political polarity associated with freedom, capitalism, and a society based on consent. As if to echo our own November 26 commentary about how right-wingers are moving from fragmentation to political stagnation, David Freiheit, on his December 26 Viva Fry podcast, expresses the same concern.
Well, speaking of angry conservatives, people, we're going to go into something that's been, there's been a lot of, I won't say infighting. It's surprising. It feels a little bit like Operation COINTELPRO. It feels a little bit like people are picking unnecessary fights that might be productive in the long run, entertaining in the short term, but destructive in the short term. Do you notice that everybody is fighting with everybody, literally? And that includes, you got Candace Owens fighting with Everybody, virtually everybody. She's not fighting with Tucker that I know of. She's not fighting with Megyn Kelly that I know of. I'm not saying that to be glib. Candace put out a tweet earlier today that says, the French government, the Israeli government, Alex Jones, everybody, all fighting against me. And I was half tempted just to like state the obvious that if everybody is fighting with you, it's not necessarily a sign that you are all the more right. It's sort of that old expression. If, you know, before noon on your way to work, you pass one bad driver, that's the bad driver. If, you know, before noon, everybody on the road is a bad driver, you're the bad driver. But I don't want to jump in on the fray. I don't have that much of an issue with Candace. I think she crossed the line a couple of times, at least specifically mine was when she, you know, said Tim Pool was acting like a man who loses $100,000 and then comes home and beats his wife because he's having financial difficulties. That's why he had his meltdown on Candace. And then she goes on a week later to have her meltdown with Ben Shapiro. And I actually had people in response to that where I said, like, Candace, you just called. When she goes out and Ben Shapiro's like, fuck you, Ben, and that midget horse you came in on. And I'm like, didn't you just shit all over Tim Pool because he called you an effing psycho, see you next Tuesday, which he shouldn't have done, but whatever. It's like, didn't you just call him a psycho for that? And then I actually had someone, one of her followers, say, well, she said F off very calmly and, charismatically. Tim Pool was just having a girlish meltdown. I'm like, oh my goodness. So anyways, bottom line. You know, if you're on the road and there's one asshole driver, that person's the asshole. But if you look around, there are 10 asshole drivers around you, you might be the asshole driver. The fact that so many people are fighting with Candace seemingly right now, I don't know. It's good for business, for everybody. There's that. Alex Jones has said, I've had enough now. I'm calling out Candace on all of this. And I think Alex Jones is fighting the righteous fight. You know, Candace could stand to learn a bit of the lessons that Alex Jones had to learn the hard way, Sandy Hook in particular. You know, it's not because we've been lied to about everything that everything we're told is a lie. I mean, you should healthily question everything, but you should also appreciate that just because they have lied to us about, you know, pretty much everything doesn't mean the earth is flat. Then who's been the more recent infighting? So you have then Ben Shapiro coming out and calling out Megyn Kelly and Candace Owens. These are like kind of big voices on the right. They're meaningful audiences. They have meaningful influence in the political intellectual sphere. Then you've got Mark Levin fighting with Jack Posobiec, the Cernoviches of the world. Like, there's a fracture that need not exist that is starting to resemble something of an Operation COINTELPRO. Just get everybody fighting among each other and nothing can get done. And who benefits? Key bueno. Well, you know, a few people, depending on what your metric of benefit is. Mark Levin, this is bringing this one up. Mark Levin, I knew what I thought of people before I got into this sphere. And it's funny, like the people who are on Fox News or the people who have the people who present themselves with a certain air of intellectual superiority. You know, it's good. Images are important and maybe some people do better at managing images and do better at managing brand in terms of being taken seriously. And the best one I can think of, and I think it's great, and I think he works hard at it, is Michael Knowles. Like, there is something to be said about being clean-shaven, well-dressed, and airing a certain gravitas. And Michael Knowles is amazing at it, and no but. Mark Levin used to be good at it until he went off a Keith Olbermann batshit-level whack job. And you like, I was once going through his Twitter feed, Mark Levin's Twitter feed. I'm like, this is, and maybe I'm not the best person on earth to point these fingers at someone, unless they'll be three pointing back at me. He's batshit crazy. And I can appreciate that some people would look at my Twitter feed and say, Viva's pretty crazy too. Maybe. But now the infighting of everyone's accusing everyone of being fake, shill, grifters, not real Jews, not real Christians, not real blacks, not real Somali. Like, everyone is on the right engaging in what is just inherent. I should not say everybody. A lot of people on the right are engaging in what is nothing more than bona fide identity politics on steroids. So-called Christians judging other Christians because of how they pray. Like someone saying, I'm a Catholic and you shouldn't be holding your rosaries like that. I'm a Catholic and this is performative fake nonsense. I always say this. If you start your sentence with as a or I am a blank in order to say, therefore, what I'm saying is even more true because I'm a blank. As a Jew, I can tell you that this is offensive. Horse crap. When you have people lecturing other people on how to practice religion, I don't think the person lecturing the other is in the right. And you had, what's his face here? You had Mark Levin come out the other day and call Jack Posobiec a crackpot. And some people say, oh, he didn't call him a crackpot. Viva, and I'm like, all right. He blocked me. Dude, I got blocked in the time that I went live because I dared come out and criticize a man who criticized Jack Posobiec. This is so flipping cool. Mark Levin then went after Matt Gaetz because, you know, if you want to, you know, ensure that you win the midterms and ensure that you win the next 2028 election, what you want to do is fight with alienate and try to religion shame and defame Matt Gaetz, Jack Posobiec. Oh, here we go. This was the one that where he's picking a fight with Megyn Kelly. It's a clip of Dan Bongino and Megyn Kelly talking about how they love Mark Levin. He loves that. Oh, thanks, Meg, but I have standards. You don't. This is now Mark Levin going after Matt Gaetz. Where Matt Gaetz says, I wonder what Fox News will do about the recent anti-Christian statements of Mark Levin. Mark Levin says, I have Christian family members, you disgusting sexual predator. Do you register with your local police department? Do you have a mugshot like your buddy? Low life. And like your buddy, I thought he was talking about Trump for a second. I'm like, and I had to bring it up. It's actually astonishing you don't appreciate the abject stupidity and hypocrisy and defamatory nature of your libel of Matt Gaetz. Now mugshots, which Matt Gaetz doesn't have, but I can tell you who does have one because that's what the lefty idiots love to use in order to impugn Trump. They're signing a guilt. You haven't thought this through, but congratulations on proving that you are indeed a raging lunatic. So I don't know what the hell is going on. I don't know what people think they're going to get out of this. Even when I, you know, disagree with people and someone says, you know, you got to write off a person entirely. And everything they say has got to be wrong and null and void from that point on. Even when it comes to Candace, she'll come to a point in her life where she'll look back on this TPUSA Charlie Kirk stuff and she'll either say, depending on if you think she's just evil and beyond redemption, she'll say, yeah, I went a little too far there, got a little too caught up in my own stuff. But when you realize that there are crisis actors, you might start to see them everywhere, even where they don't exist. Candace might get there, or she might sincerely only be doing this disingenuously. That we'll never know. But even with Candace, all right, you can argue on specific issues, but for this to become something of a battle that is tearing, not even a movement, but tearing political unity apart, I don't know who gains what out of this. You got people that are acting in a way that is maybe beneficial to the individual. I say maybe, and I'm not accusing anyone of grifting, but that is objectively harmful politically. And then some of you might say, well, the truth, if it's harmful, so be it. That's fine. That's if it's the truth. If it's just drama for the sake of drama and fighting for the sake of fighting, which this feels like under certain circumstances, you got to ask yourself, what the hell is going on and why is it going on? But some things are bona fide distractions, but distractions are not always bad. It can't be 24/7 focusing on one issue. The fighting is bizarre. And it's almost like you get into the position where you can actually meaningfully enact change. And instead you're like, well, crap, that's hard. It's a lot easier just to start fighting among ourselves right now. And when you're the underdog, You play as a team to get back into power. And then when you get back into power, you realize we all had diverging politics. So let's go and cannibalize this movement right now and destroy everything, the potential that we have to do right now.
You're listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. In our blog post of November 26 regarding the fragmentation on the right, it reads, and I quote, "It's bad enough when those on the right publicly exhibit internal ideological conflicts. It's even worse when those conflicts become personal. Not exactly inspiring displays of reasoned debate or clearly defined principles. Whether or not these conflicts will evolve from a minor right-wing fragmentation to another major right-wing stagnation is something impossible to predict. But to suggest that these disagreements are being aired and debated in a way that is just right depends on whether one takes them seriously or just as comedic entertainment," end quote. To which our listener John M. from Cincinnati reacted in his feedback, quote, "So very, very well said," end quote. Well, thanks for the thumbs up, John, but it appears that the entertainment is not about to end soon. So when David Freiheit says, "For this to become a battle that is tearing political unity apart, I don't know who gains what out of this," I don't think that political unity is the real concern behind all the disagreements, especially if the disagreements are serious enough to warrant a parting of the ways. Again, where this is all heading is impossible to predict, but we'll know more as we dive into the year 2026. So, do you suppose that all the infighting on the right is really just about what is being called clickbait and attempting to keep the right in the public eye? That's what both Robert Barnes on Aviva Fry show recently, as well as Ricky Gervais in his own monologue, contend on the return side of our upcoming bumper. But on this side, Ricky Gervais describes how he sees the big picture of humanity and the human condition, revealing a rather sobering truth about the reality of our nature. However, I think his perspective is a bit removed from that of humans, as I will explain when we return.
So humanity, what is humanity? What are we? Well, we've touched upon it there. We're great apes. Not metaphorically, we're literally great apes. We are 98.6% genetically identical to a chimpanzee. We're closer to chimps than chimps are to gorillas. We left our common ancestor about 6 million years ago. We have the same life cycle as any other animal, which is our parents mate, we're born, we grow, we mate, our parents die, all our friends die, and then we die. So let's take the first of those, right? Birth. It's already an odd one for humanity because the human being is born before the end of its natural gestation period. And by that, I mean, because of our evolution, our brain is so big, we have to get that huge head out early. That's why the skull is in parts and supple, right? And then we have to carry on gestating outside the womb. That's why we're so useless. Compare us to other mammals, right? A giraffe is walking along. It goes, "Oh, I'm proper pregnant," right? "I'm going to have a baby giraffe right here," right? Yeah, there it is. "See you later," right? And the baby goes, "Mum, can I get a..." It's got to be fucking ready, right? We're helpless, right? Just think of that, right? 9 months, we're just growing in this perfect environment, just like that, right? And then suddenly, and you're being squeezed out of an hole near an arse. You're covered in shit, they're screaming. You go, "I can't breathe." Someone goes, "Yes, you fucking can," right? That's the first 1 second of life on Earth. You don't know where you are. You can't choose where you're born. And who cares? If humanity was wiped out today, the Earth would return to a paradise in a few hundred years. If we lose bees, we're a desert forever. We're not that important. We're just one species of narcissistic ape. And some people on social media get annoyed when I say we're apes, you know, religious types, Americans. One bloke said to me, "Speak for yourself, dude, I ain't no ape." And I said back, "Well, you are, because we're all apes." He went, "Nah, what's a gorilla ever done? We've walked on the moon." I sent back, "What do you mean we? You've done fuck all. You've spelt moon wrong." It's weird, isn't it, when people take credit for the sort of rest of the species, because that's what's pushed civilization forward, you know, a few geniuses along the way. Like, there's 8 billion people on this planet. Most of us do nothing. We eat shit and die. Like, if there was a meteor heading towards Earth to definitely destroy it, 4 billion people would get down on their knees and pray to their particular god, and a few hundred scientists would work out how to get Bruce Willis up there to stop it. It's an odd concept, praying, for me. I can't work out how God decides. All those people praying at once for different things. Is it like best idea wins? Or is it a democracy? Like, he puts things at each issue, he goes, right, votes for and against, you know? If it's a democracy, we're in trouble. We're a tiny nation. Like, next time there's a flood warning in the West Country, if we're all going, oh, I hope everyone's okay. If the whole of China is going, yeah, fuck Bristol. There's a billion of them. Oh, yeah. More about China later. It's very sad. But we all die. We all know we're going to die. And we all do die. So it doesn't really matter if we die one at a time along the way or all at once in one big final Armageddon. The result is we're all going to be dead one day and we're all going to be dead forever. And I've been to a lot of funerals in my time. You live this long, you know a lot of people, they die, right? And I don't mind funerals because it's the end. I mean, I think we live too long. That's why we have time to worry about all this. We're not meant to live this long. As a species, we're about 300,000 years old as Homo sapiens. We've been around as hominids for a few million years. And of course, along with every other life form that exists at the moment, we've been evolving for 3.5 billion years. Everything that exists at the moment all came from the same little blob of organic matter 3.5 billion years ago. That's why it annoys me when people say, oh yeah, humans, we're the most evolved. We're not the most evolved. We're no more evolved than the slug or the snail. People go, oh, come on, look at them. Yeah, they got it right early doors. Nature keeps testing them. Do you want eyes? No. Not really. No. So yeah, we've been around for about 300,000 years. And for most of that time, we had the same life expectancy as every other wild ape, 35, 40, if you're lucky. You're born, you grow, you mate, you're playing with your kids, you get a cut, you go, oh, what's that, dead? Right? But now with antibiotics and medicine, we've pushed that forward. A child born today can expect to live to about 100. And scientists said soon that'll be 120. And science also said that in the near future, there's no reason, with proper care and attention, that human beings won't regularly live to 150 years old, which is amazing until you remember that we get a set number of brain cells, right, which we only lose. You can't get them back. So in the future, there's going to be 15 billion people on the planet, you know, half of them are going to be over 100, and they're all going to have Alzheimer's. It's going to be like Dawn of the Dead. My auntie died of Alzheimer's. I don't know how you die of Alzheimer's. She forgot to live. Right?
Who's in finance is a big fat fraud. He's a joke. He's a disgrace. He's a liar. Liar about the records at TPUSA. I mean, he just lied about every basic thing. Wolves in finance, big fat fraud. He wants to get into the clickbait whore world with Candace Owens, who's the queen of the brothel there. That's all he did well, and that's the only thing he did right. I see somebody in the chat's like, oh, you guys don't only get 10,000 views. You don't have an impact. Dude, check into all views across all podcasts. On average, it's over 250,000 every single week. Somebody's so dumb, they don't know the difference between live viewership and the rest. Second, these people that confuse clicks with impact still don't understand American politics or global politics. The getting millions of views means literally nothing 9 times out of 10. Because all it means, people around the world tuned in to see a whole bunch of things. That doesn't mean they share the opinion. That doesn't mean they're going to spread the opinion. It doesn't mean who's watching it anybody cares about. They're generally inconsequential, unimpactful individuals. You can impact the public debate and dialogue to some degree, but you're not really meaningfully moving the needle in terms of actual policy change. Now, I see a lot of influencers out there chasing clicks, thinking clicks equals influence. Generally, no, it doesn't. what it means influence is substantive commentary of some degree of value that ultimately translates into impacting the court of public opinion in ways that can actually impact people's behavior and actual policy.
But that criticism, it's the criticism of losers who will criticize regardless. If you get big numbers, they'll accuse you of being clickbait or just doing it for the views. And if you don't get their big numbers, then they accuse you of being irrelevant, whatever. What I've been after is substance and first and foremost, not being first, but being right and trying to be insightful, whether it's popular or not. So,
and they're destroying it for the purposes of chasing clicks, confusing clicks. With actual influence when the two ain't got nothing to do with one another. Not over time, not in a sustained way.
But the world is getting worse, and I blame the beginning of its demise on social media. Because Twitter and Facebook, that's where this ridiculous notion bred, right, and became stable, that it was more important to be popular than right. Right? Everything was like me, agree with me. It falls into two tribes. Oh, I don't agree with them, so I'd block them, right? And now in this post-truth era, people don't care about the argument. They don't look at the argument. They say, who's saying the argument? No, they're not on our side, right? It's ludicrous, okay? And it also bred this ridiculous notion, we've always had my opinion is worth as much as your opinion. But now we've got my opinion is worth as much as your fact, which is nonsense. I get tweets from people saying, well, I believe the Earth is 6,000 years old. Well, I believe you're a fucking idiot then, right? You can't have an opinion on the age of the Earth, right? You can have your own opinions, but you can't have your own facts, right? But it was all about being popular, right? And even politicians picked up those symptoms. Politicians tweet now, they want to be popular. We had a referendum about Brexit because they were passing the buck. They didn't want to make a mistake. So, and the other thing is this ridiculous thing of, let's ask the average person what they think. Let's stop asking the average person what the... Do you know how fucking stupid the average person is? We still sell bottles of bleach with big labels on that say, do not drink, right? Let's take those labels off, right? For 2 years. And then have a referendum.
Well, that's one way to solve a political problem. But I think that too many people on the right don't really appreciate the nature of stupidity, which is why we brought this issue to the forefront a couple of years ago on a January 11, 2024 broadcast when we referred to stupidity as socialism's moral defect. Now, this argument was based on Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a German Lutheran pastor, theologian, and anti-Nazi dissident who, while in German prison during the Hitler years, formulated a theory arguing that we must seek to understand the nature of stupidity, as stupidity is not an intellectual defect, but a moral one. Stupidity, therefore, is a much more dangerous enemy than malice, because one can expose malice and argue against it and even use force to stop it. But this is not possible when dealing with stupidity. As they say, you just can't fix stupid, and in this context, stupidity is a choice. Ignorance, on the other hand, is a different matter, because every human being is born ignorant and had no choice in that situation. As if to echo Ricky Gervais' description of humanity and each individual's cruel introduction to life after birth, this from Ayn Rand's lexicon on the concept of tabula rasa, and I quote, "At birth, a child's mind is tabula rasa. He has the potential of awareness, the mechanism of a human consciousness, but no content. Speaking metaphorically, he has a camera with an extremely sensitive, unexposed film, his conscious mind, and an extremely complex computer waiting to be programmed, his subconscious. Both are blank. He knows nothing of the external world. He faces an immense chaos, which he must learn to perceive by means of the complex mechanism which he must learn to operate. If, in 2 years of an adult life, men could learn as much as infants learn in their first 2 years, they would have the capacity of genius. to focus his eyes, which is not an innate but an acquired skill, to perceive the things around him by integrating his sensation into precepts, which is not an innate but an acquired skill, to coordinate his muscles for the task of crawling, then standing upright, then walking, and ultimately to grasp the process of concept formation and to learn to speak. These are some of an infant's tasks and achievements whose magnitude is not equaled by most men in the rest of their lives," end quote. Now, the significance of all this is that human beings are completely programmable, and they do so through the use of language, which is the software of the mind, and of course, accurate definitions are critical. Humanity's unique potential to program itself and its reasoning process is both the power and the weakness of the species. To the extent that individual minds operate on concepts and definitions that coincide with reality and with reason, humanity can elevate itself into a social condition of peace and prosperity, and to the recognition of and appreciation of the fact that life is an end in itself. This is a point on which I would part company with Ricky Gervais when he suggested that if humanity was wiped out today, the earth would return to a paradise in a few hundred years. If we lose bees, life gets wiped out. Humans are not that important. What? Important? To who? Humans are important to humans. That's the only point of reference here. And by whose standard is a world without humans and a lot of bees considered a paradise? Remember, in recently citing Adam and Eve's being cast out of the Garden of Eden, we determined that Eden was definitely a place where you don't want to be, an uncivilized environment in which the knowledge of good and evil does not yet exist, which, ironically, seems to be an environment emerging as we enter the new year. I certainly cannot claim to have knowledge of what 2026 will bring, but expect a realignment of those identified with the right. Alex Jones has just come out very recently and completely denounced Candace Owens, who he used to support before, and whose reputation and credibility is simply crashing, despite some of her past successes at breaking some accurate and valid news reports. And then Robert Barnes warned those on the right against entering the, quote, clickbait whore world with Candace Owens, end quote. And I totally agree with him that people who confuse clicks with impact don't understand politics. Clicks are generally inconsequential and do not equal influence. Influence is substantive commentary of some degree of value, he said. And this is a principle that I learned from my early days in radio. As a regular weekly participant on CJBK AM's Left, Right, and Center, which are all archived on Just Right's website, our show was rated as the number one talk show in the London area at the time, and it was highly influential in its own right. But even so, its listening audience numbers then are dwarfed by our listening audience today. Influence is more than just about numbers, because numbers alone can work both for and against your desired objective. But when you combine influential, quote-unquote, commentary directed at an influential audience, which I'm pleased to say includes many of our listeners, the ways in which that influence is felt is not always immediately visible and can never be predicted. But influential, it is. One can both be influenced and influence others, which is why I'd like to influence you to join us again next week when we will continue our journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
Good, right. Well, thank you all.
Thank you.
Well, Bernard, how have you enjoyed having your minister out of the office for a week?
Oh, not very much.
Haven't you?
Yeah, it makes things very difficult.
Oh, Bernard. A minister's absence is a godsend. You can do the job properly for once. No silly questions, no bright ideas, no fussing about what the papers are saying. Do you know, Bernard, I sometimes think our minister doesn't believe that he exists unless he's reading about himself in the papers. I'll bet you the first thing he says when he gets into the office is, any press reports on my Washington speech?
How much do you bet?
£1.
Done. He won't, because he's already asked. In the car on the way back from Heathrow.
You're learning better.